Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Sego, episode 120 for May 13th, 2010, the Haiku Operating System. It's time for Floss Weekly, the weekly show about free, libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz. Merlin at Stonehenge.com. You might remember me from all the Perl stuff I've done and the Smalltalk stuff I've done, but probably most likely because you've listened to 112 of these shows before, and I've been on most of them. So I'm very happy to have another in our rotating panel of co-hosts, maybe a bit of an audition. I hope he's not too nervous this week. I'm bringing on this week none other than the very famous Aaron Sego. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, the whole audition thing, it brings me right back to my vaudevillian days. Yeah, the song when I was a song and dance man or something like that.
Wait, no, you know these days. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, these days I'm obviously working mostly in, exclusively in free software, and most people probably know me from the KDE project if they've heard of me at all. I'm not quite as famous as you yet, but we'll see.
You never know. In some circles, you're probably a lot more famous than I am, so that all works out really nicely. And I was just going to say, you know, we moved to a new time slot. We lost John O'Bacon. His shoes are really big to fill, so I've actually had to enlist a number of both men and women to try to fill John O's shoes. You're you're third in line now so far, so I hope you're not too nervous about your audition here.
Absolutely not. No. Looking forward to it. Okay. It's a beautiful sunny day here. I've already had my coffee, so I think I'm juiced up and ready to go.
And for those of you that can see the video, you can see that I'm back home again. I'm in L.A. on the 33rd floor, like I was the last couple of weeks, 43rd floor, whatever it was. I actually have my big blue Yeti mic, so I probably sound a little better than the last couple of weeks, especially 2 weeks ago. I don't know. I really messed up on that one. And I just got back, actually, from Mac Mania 10, which is the 51st Insight Cruises cruise that we have done. Got to be on the cruise there with a lot of number of really cool people like Andy Anatko and Celso Hagen. And Derek Story, the great photographer, and all sorts of stuff. We had some really great classes. You can see pictures of that if you go to flickr.com/Randall-Schwartz. It's linked from there. So you can go see what I did on my summer vacation pictures. I also have been getting great feedback on the show from last week, the Mars rover driver, Scott Maxwell, Paolo Baluta. And I want to apologize, by the way. I mispronounced his name like a dozen times. It's Paolo Baluta. But I got some great feedback. Hey, Aaron, did you get a chance to see that show?
I absolutely did. That was brilliant. 6 years on, they're still going, and the challenges they had to are facing. I love the discussion about, you know, how do you make this all work when it's, you know, millions of kilometers away and a 20 megahertz processor. Yeah, I can really understand why there's so much good feedback on it. It was a brilliant show.
Yeah, it was really great. I'm sure that's going to keep going on. So, not to belittle today's guest, because we also have another really interesting show lined up for us. We are going to be talking to a couple of the developers on the Haiku operating system. The Haiku operating system, from what I understand, is the derivative of the original B operating system, capital B, little e, B, which was an alternative box, a kind of a independent hardware and software platform that grew up sort of in the late Mac era, or at least the middle Mac era. And we have on the show today, we have Ryan Levenwood, who is one of the key developers, been with it from almost the beginning. And let's see if I get this right. Neil Sasha Radek, who's got a name that's really hard for me to pronounce because it's spelled really odd for me as an American. And we've got them on to talk about the B operating system. Do you know anything about B?
I actually worked with Benoit Schillings for a while, who was, I believe, software engineer number one. They started the software engineering after the hardware engineering at B, and he was their first guy to come in. And he actually did such seminal piece of work as App Server on BOS. Crazy, crazy guy. Also used BOS briefly as kind of toyed around with it back in the day when they did the R5 release. I'm really looking forward to meeting these two guys because if they're anything like Benoit, they're going to be a lot of fun. And it's really going to be interesting to see how they've transitioned what was, you know, a proprietary operating system that, you know, had some really great ideas but didn't quite work out in the market, and how they're transitioning that to a successful free software project.
Well, let's not wait any further. Let's get them right on, shall we?
Excellent.
All the way from South Florida, we have Ryan Levengood. Hello, Ryan.
Hello, Randall.
Hi, good to have you on the call. Thanks for being around.
Thanks. Great to be here.
All right. And from slightly further away, one of the reasons we moved the show to early time slot was so we could get people from Europe in on our show. We have Niels Sascha Reedijk, all the way from the Netherlands. Did I get your name right?
Hi. What did you say? Sorry.
Oh, I said Niels Sascha Reedijk. Is that close?
it sounds perfect.
Oh, very good, very good. And it's a little late. What time is it over there? About 4 or 5, probably?
It's almost 7.
Almost 7. Okay, great. Very cool. Well, the reason we brought you guys on today is to talk about the Haiku operating system. Ryan, why don't you start by describing a little bit? I mean, we went in the intro a little bit about what Haiku is, but from the horse's mouth, as it might be, describe a little bit about what Haiku is and maybe a little bit of the history. How did it get to be?
Well, Haiku is essentially an open source recreation of BOS. And BOS, or the B operating system, was a operating system sort of created in the 90s by a company called B Incorporated, which was basically started by an executive from Apple Europe, actually, who left Apple to start his own company. His name was Jean-Louis Gassi. And he wanted to sort of maybe start over in computing and build a new computer, both hardware, and eventually they started working on an operating system for that hardware as well. The hardware was called the B-Box, and the operating system was called the BOS. And this was very advanced for the time, highly multi-threaded, multi-processor. The actual B-Box was a dual 66 megahertz machine, which in those days was pretty unusual. And the system was just designed from the ground up to really cater well to multiprocessors. And, you know, oddly enough, it was a little too early maybe because this was long before we had all the multi-courses as we have today. So nonetheless, though, they persevered. They had several releases for a BOS up to version 5. And at that point, they just really weren't able to compete in the market. There was some, you know, problems from Microsoft as far as having difficulty getting BOS on OEM machines. And, you know, Microsoft was flexing their monopoly muscle in that case. And sort of B did this thing called a focus shift where they moved to try to do internet appliances. And that didn't work out too well. So they eventually went out of business. And nonetheless, they still built a pretty big following of enthusiasts who really liked the system a lot. And a lot of those people didn't want to see it die. And so because of Linux and other open source projects, the basic idea was the best way to continue the legacy of BOS was to recreate it in open source. And so therefore, the Haiku project, which was called OpenBOS originally, was started in August of 2001. And obviously, we couldn't use the name OpenBOS for very long. So a few years later, there was a contest, essentially, to come up with a new name. And Haiku was one of the choices and ended up being the one that won. And the cute anecdote associated with the word Haiku and BOS is that the browser NetPositive that came with BOS used to have Haiku error messages. Mm-hmm. I can't come up with one off the top of my head, but it's something of the nature of like, site could not be found, you know, you must search more, you know, your destiny is there, whatever. You know, something funny like that, and that might even be a real Haiku. Maybe I should write that down.
I think the wrong number of syllables in the middle of phrase there, but that's
yeah,
okay.
I do have some examples, but you can even find those on the web. They're still archived, so you can take a look at those. But anyway, so Haiku basically has been in development since 2001 and just had some slow progress. And finally, in last year, in September of 2009, we had our first alpha release, which we call R1A1. So the R1 is release one, and that is the sort of release terminology versioning from BOS. And alpha one, obviously, is the first alpha. And we also just 2 days ago on Monday had our alpha 2 released. So we're trying to, you know, move a little faster, have more of a release often, maybe not early in this case, but release often sort of mindset and move forward to our first release one.
Well, thanks for the summary of that. Good having you on the show today, guys. I really appreciate you coming on. No, just kidding. let's go back to the beginning here a little bit. You covered 10 years in 2 minutes. That was really pretty cool.
Yeah, obviously it was over the top. Hey, Wikipedia is there for people who really want to dig into it.
Yeah, you can find out more at the site. No, just kidding. Let's go back to the beginning. The Bee Machine now, that seemed pretty radical at the time, although by today's standards that would actually be a pretty almost lame box, right?
Yeah, I mean, in those days having dual processors was not unheard of, but for a desktop machine it was very unusual. I mean, like as I said, this was long before multi-core became how prevalent that it is today. I mean, obviously, you know, people who know technology know that we had to basically do multi-cores to get any more speed because we just couldn't make the transistors any smaller to get more gigahertz and all that. So that's what's so funny about BOS. It was kind of before its time. And that's why Haiku, even though it's sort of a recreation of a 10-year-old operating system, is still very apropos now because we have all these multi-core machines and people who've used it on those and even on netbooks with slow processors have found it to be very fast. So a little more about the B-Box. It had a funny evolution. It started off with, of all things, these processors from AT&T called Hobbit processors, which I'm sure all the Lord of the Ring fans will find that funny. And literally, I believe it was Steve Sackerman, who was one of the early employees at B, like practically soldered this machine together himself. Mm. And with these Hobbit processors, which I think he picked up at like Fry's or just, you know, some random California computer shop. And he put those together. And that was the first thing they did. They did the B box before they even worked on the BOS because they were actually going to try to license an operating system instead of writing their own, but they didn't find anything that was good enough, so they had to write their own. And eventually the hardware sort of died off, and B shows the nature of the design of it and how good it was. It was able to be ported from that Hobbit to PowerPC machines and eventually to Intel as well. So there was basically three different architectures that it ran against in, you know, relatively short period of time that it was out.
I like the idea of starting a machine back from scratch like that. I mean, it sounds really reminiscent of the stories I've heard about Wozniak and then Steve Jobs starting at Apple. Everything all started like in garages back then. Now, what was Apple doing at the time? That just had the early Macs at that point, right?
Yes, that's actually, Apple has some involvement with B because, of course, as I said, John Luis Cassis was an executive in Apple Europe, and he left the company to start B. And a lot of people sort of see some of the Apple GUI designed in the BOS GUI, which was always well received and well liked. And but basically, what happened is, as a lot of people know, you know, Mac OS 9 or Classic or whatever, you know, the older Mac OS before Mac OS 10 was getting very long in the tooth. You know, didn't really support proper preemptive multi, you know, processing with having like machines having or the different applications rather having to cooperate instead of having the true multi-processing and, you know, that we have today of the machine, you know, each application being separate address space and all that. So anyways, Apple had to get a new operating system and they did their own Copeland project to start over from scratch. And that sort of went down in flames, I guess, for better or for worse. So they, much like B originally, they wanted to buy someone to get a new operating system. And at that point, they had a couple choices, one being B and the other being Next, which, of course, as everyone knows, was Steve Jobs' company. Mm-hmm. So Apple made an offer to B. I can't remember all the numbers. I think it was like they offered them a little over $100 million, but John Luis Cassis wanted like $200. And so they couldn't negotiate. And so Apple said, okay, sorry. And they went to Next and ended up buying Next, I think, for $430 million or something like that, which is kind of ironic. They paid twice as much for Next as they could have bought B for.
Yeah, but they got Steve Jobs in that deal, though.
They got Steve Jobs and the rest is history. I mean, you know, the Apple we have today may not even exist if Steve Jobs hadn't come back, you know. And I mean, I'm not a huge Apple fan, but I will certainly appreciate that and what he did for the company and stuff. So anyways, that's what happened. And because of that, B sort of, I think that was maybe the death knell. That's, you know, when things started going downhill. So I believe that was still when they were on PowerPC. And after that is when they tried to go to Intel and see if they could get B put on the OEM machines like Dell's and things like that, like I talked about earlier. But that didn't work out, as I said, because Microsoft basically would revoke their cheap OEM licenses to any OEM who put another operating system alongside. So you couldn't even buy a machine with like Windows and a little B to try out. You had to, only have Windows. So also what B did, I didn't mention before, was they made in their release 5, they released a free, quote unquote, personal edition that basically was a installer you would put inside Windows and install it, and it would make a little image, and you would double click that, and it would basically reboot your computer and go into BOS. And that was pretty cool. And it was like only like 200 megabytes and full operating system in that amount of space. And that actually ended up being reused once B went out of business to create various sort of BOS distros, so to speak, that kind of kept it going until Haiku was in a more usable state.
So. You know, I remember when BOS did that move and they actually started producing the personal edition. And I was working in a software shop at the time where a lot of the guys were like, oh, this is great. This is awesome. We had these discussions whether or not B had any future. And I was in the position that it probably didn't. The reason why was because it's proprietary. And I said, if they went open source with it, they might have a future. So it's kind of neat to see that there is this free operating system now that is actually, you know, the successor of B that's still alive, even though the original B isn't. And there's that difference between, you know, free and closed. Obviously, you're not the only operating system out there either. There are a lot of free and open source software systems. I mean, even Apple's OS X has a foundational layer that's, free and open source software. How do you see B stacking up to comparing alongside, or where is the position of B in a world where there is the Linux and the Mac OS X and these other systems?
Basically, I think the power that we have with, Haiku, that we're building on the foundation of the B operating system is the cohesiveness of a single system. And the thing we have with Linux and to some extent the BSDs is sort of, maybe too much freedom, too much choice. I mean, there is a whole book called The Paradox of Choice, how the modern society basically puts a lot of us into this analysis paralysis because we have too many options. And again, it's nice to have the options you have on Linux to basically either have, Qt or GTK or, a million different window managers, or GNOME versus KDE. And the choice is nice. You can basically build exactly the kind of system you want. But that's really for the geeks, the people who know how to build those. And for the average user, it becomes confusing because you don't know what's the best and what's the best choice to make when you're building your system and putting it together. And in some sense, things like Ubuntu have sort of made those choices for you.
If I may add.
Okay, go ahead, Niels.
If I may add, one of the advantages is indeed that everything's built up from, the ground up and completely tuned to each other. I know that BOS used to get a lot of wow responses from people when they saw it playing different video files and doing some OpenGL on a single Pentium 200 or less. And I think the reason that they could have done it is not only the smart architecture, but also if you control the kernel and the window manager and the interface to the graphic cards, you know exactly where to tweak to get the best desktop performance. Whereas where you have a Linux, the kernel by itself is pretty much generic or slightly biased towards the server operating system. And you have all these components that are compatible, but not really, warmed up to each other.
So does this imply that you guys are having to write a lot of the application software yourself from the ground up? And if so, you talked about choice and simplifying that, which is really a compelling idea. How does the whole application space relate to the choices available in Haiku, and how are you folks moving that side of it forward?
Well, basically, as Niels said, we have almost everything that an application developer would need in the system as part of the system, as part of a cohesive API. And what that allows for an application developer is ideally a very minimal need for external libraries. And, we all know the DLL hell that you can get into with Windows, that basically this problem has been solved to some extent in Linux with their very, very complex package management systems. So to some extent, we want to try to avoid that by just having Haiku come with most of the things you will need. For example, what BOS had and what Haiku also has is a built-in media kit that allows for decoding audio and video, and with a pluggable architecture to decode different kinds of video and different encodings of audio and video. And in addition, there's also a translation kit for images that basically translates PNGs, JPEGs, GIFs, whatever, into a base bitmap format, and which allows for easily translating from one form to another. And any application needs to open images, they can open whatever file formats are supported by the translators in the system without having to specifically link to, let's say, live JPEG or live PNG to open JPEGs or PNGs. And so what we have there is that allows for, you know, more complex application to be written just on the base system without needing a lot of dependencies. And that's the ideal that we want to have. And we also want the APIs to be so good and to mesh so well together that no one will really want to pull in anything externally. Now, with that said, it would be dumb of us not to make use of all the great open source code out there, and we do. And what we've done is just use it in a way that is still cohesive with the Haiku system and the legacy of BOS by basically hiding a lot of the code that would have a different interface behind the APIs inside Haiku. A big example of that being FFmpeg, which a lot of people will know is a very big video decoding project. We have that basically behind our media kit to do a lot of the heavy lifting to decode a lot of the modern video. And in the same way, we use FreeType to do the font rendering. We use anti-grain geometry, which is like sort of a vector graphics library, to do a lot of our rendering of our icons and of the windows and other elements of the GUI. What else? We also make use of some open source drivers. We basically wrote a free BSD compatibility layer for the network and for wireless, so we can basically build off a lot of the work done in free BSD. And the reason we're doing BSD is because we have an MIT license, and so we prefer code under that. So it's more compatible with the vision that we have. Because Haiku, besides being an open source operating system, also we want it to be friendly to commercial use, both as a system as a whole and for people writing commercial software. So I think in a sense that's where we maybe blend and fill in sort of a missing area where of having an open source operating system that still allows for some commercial use. So sort of like, you know, the best of both worlds between Linux and Mac.
Right. So it's interesting that you're able to actually leverage so much of that previous work, as you mentioned, FFmpeg, et cetera. I also understand that you folks have done some work with the ever-growing WebKit ecosystem as well.
Yes, that is obviously a huge issue. Any kind of web browser and full support for modern HTML is a huge thing for any operating system nowadays. So for a long time, that was really lacking on Haiku and BOS. We had had a port of Firefox, and the developers who did that were geniuses to do what they did. But basically, there was a lot of difficulty in that because there was basically some pushback from upstream from Firefox and not allow some of the patches because BOS was getting so old, and we were also on a very old compiler, GCC 2.93. So basically the only way forward was to make use of WebKit. So in 2007, I actually took on a bounty at a website called Haikuware to port WebKit to Haiku, at least get an initial port going. And I did that. It honestly, to be perfectly honest, wasn't a massive success. I did get it compiling, and it worked to some extent, but it still was lacking a lot. And then I got busy with work and other things and wasn't able to continue working on that. But we sort of brought it back from the dead in the Google Summer of Code 2009 last year, where my student Maxime Simon basically sort of updated that port and brought in a lot of newer code from WebKit and kind of kept it going. And then finally, the beginning of this year, we actually were able to hire one of our long-term developers, Steven Asmus, to basically continue that port. And he's done a fantastic job, basically fleshed out a lot of things that I wasn't able to finish before, and also basically wrote a new browser called Web Positive, which, if you remember before, I talked about the BOS browser Net Positive. So that's sort of a mashing of WebKit and Net Positive to come up with our new browser. And we actually were able to release that browser with the alpha release, alpha 2, a few days ago. So it's kind of really getting out there in the wild and still needs a lot of work. It's not Chrome. It's not Safari yet. But it's definitely making progress. And obviously, because we were able to build off of the massive foundation of WebKit, which is a really well-designed system, and it's getting better and better every day. There are so many people from Apple and Google just putting a lot of work into that, that it's basically just pretty easy for us just to build off of that.
I want to get into something you talked about a little bit earlier. You talked about the API being sort of unified because it's one operating system interface, and you were doing things like hiding FFmpeg behind that API. And right. I'm kind of curious about that because, like, if I'm, say, programming for Linux or FreeBSD or something, I get to look at the FFmpeg documentation and understand its current interface and know that it's going to be future upward compatible, most likely. I know it changes occasionally, but so I can build my app better, stronger, and faster in the future because the API changes to match the actual API of FFmpeg. Now, if you're locking in an API sort of layer in between that, so you're sort of one layer removed from FFmpeg, aren't you hiding some of this? I mean, aren't you kind of locking in at a specific version of FFmpeg and not able to really take advantage of future features?
No, actually, what you're doing by putting a layer in between is providing more flexibility. I mean, what you say is true that, you know, if you're writing directly to FFmpeg, you can take advantage of maybe advancements that make in the, that are made in the API. But you also are at the mercy of FFmpeg, and if they change their API in a great way, maybe between major releases, which a lot of open source projects do, you would have to sort of rewrite your application around that. Now, what we've done is we have our own API, the Media Kit, that wraps around that. And above and beyond the fact that we're providing a layer in between the application and something like FFmpeg, it actually allows for changing the back end. So let's say we're making use of FFmpeg for a lot of different video formats, but maybe someone comes along who is like a video encoding genius and or decoding and encoding and basically writes like a brand new, let's say, H.264 decoder just for Haiku, totally catered for Haiku, designed to really work well in our media kit. Basically, any applications who need to decode H.264, which might now use the FFmpeg backend, will transparently be able to use this new backend for this new encoder that someone wrote without actually having to change the application. So in a sense, because we've decoupled from FFmpeg, there's no longer a dependency on it. So if something better comes along, you can more easily switch.
Yeah, it's
a very smart way of future-proofing that. Absolutely.
I understand the ability by putting the indirect layer in there. Obviously, you're going to be isolating yourself from possible backend component changes. But I'm also now wondering then, you've sort of built with Haiku an entirely separate ecosystem. What can I do as a software developer then if I'm creating an open source project that I want to run as an app on Haiku and also want to run it on Linux and FreeBSD? What are my options there? Is there anything I can write that's cross compatible?
Well, we actually did have a Qt port recently completed by some people outside of Haiku, and we've actually had quite a few Qt applications ported over to Haiku. So if someone wants to write a multi-platform application, I think using Qt is a way to go, and they could then basically leverage that on Haiku and on Linux and Windows and wherever else that the Qt framework runs. So that is an option. But generally, you know, what we're trying to do with Haiku is, you know, much the same way maybe with Mac OS X. I mean, you know, in generally, if you're going to write a Mac OS X application in Objective-C, you know, you're writing it for the Mac. And you can take advantage of all the applications and libraries, really APIs that are available on the Mac that make it unique, that make it powerful. And you can write your application to make use of those. And the problem is whenever you have to go multi-platform, you sort of have to either make a choice to have the core of your application that's truly multi-platform, totally separate, and then write very complex layers for each operating system that look very native, or you do a little higher approach where you write like something in Qt that's sort of multi-platform, and you sort of go to the lowest common denominator to some extent because there's, you know, your application can only make use of what's provided in that framework. And that may be limited to what's provided in all the systems that runs on. And we've seen that a lot with Java and the various GUIs associated with Java. So generally, you can write a multi-platform application that will run in Haiku if you use Qt. And we could basically port GTK and other frameworks like that probably pretty easily to Haiku. They've already been ported to Windows and outside the Linux ecosystem. But in general, you know, in the same way that you want to take you know, advantage of the power of the APIs on the Mac when you write a Mac application. I think the same thing applies to Haiku. I mean, long term, we hope that we'll have a platform that's compelling enough, that's easy enough to develop for, that people want to write applications directly for Haiku and make use of the APIs that are available. I mean, you can see sort of what's happened with the iPhone and the iPad, where, you know, people have really jumped on board of that. Now, will Haiku become that popular? You know, if we're lucky, maybe, but, you know, we have to be realistic. But it could be, you know, a platform that could get some popularity and maybe also have its own tablet or whatever in the future. And
I love that. I love that ambition. I mean, having that kind of, you know, we could take over the world in some small way. I mean, that's great. I mean, you really have to take, yeah, you know, those kind of big picture views. You mentioned, you know, the iPhone and the iPad. And that is an interesting new part of the computing landscape, right? This mobility side of it. Then you mentioned, you know, maybe one day it'll have, you know, its own tablet, Haiku, that is. Where do you see that going? Is that something that you folks are actually actively developing for? How is that going to fit into the system? Is Haiku trying to take this whole concept that, you know, the philosophy behind it and bring it beyond desktop as well?
Well,
I think right now our focus is definitely on the desktop. And we've always maintained that focus because otherwise, you know, we'd be developing this till, you know, the year 3000. So, I mean, that's provided a focus, but, I mean, we have to look at reality. We have to look at the popularity of things like netbooks and now, you know, the iPad, and there's going to be a lot of other tablets that are probably going to be very similar to the iPad coming out from Google and various other companies. I have an iPad. I think it's a pretty cool device. Do I want to use it all day? No, but it does, you know, fill it maybe a small niche for maybe like, I mean, could I give it to my grandma to use? Heck yeah. I mean, that's where we sort of get, you know, that simplicity that maybe might bother geeks like us, or the sort of the lockdown nature of that platform. You know, it's good for the average person. So as far as Haiku is concerned, right now we're really focusing on the desktop as far as what the active developers are doing. But I know I certainly have been keeping things in mind. And what we did do last year in the summer of Code 2009 was have a student work on an ARM port, because a lot of these devices like the iPhone, the iPad, they're basically running on ARM platforms. The iPad has a new chip, but it's still ARM. And so basically, in the same way that B was ported from this Hobbit to PowerPC to Intel, we're focused on Intel right now with Haiku, but we want to eventually move to maybe having it multi-platform as well and have it an ARM port, maybe a PowerPC port, and certainly an X64 port. Which is,
again, that's very ambitious. Yeah, I think that's really cool. You keep mentioning we in the terms of, you know, we're developing this and we're creating these things. Maybe Niels, you could tell us a bit about the actual, you know, the people structure around and behind Haiku. What is that actual, you know, who is the we? What is the we doing? And if I wanted to try it out and get involved in this we, how would I do that?
Well, who is we? I would say that there is the group of developers who are actually, many of them are quite long already involved since the beginning, since 2001 or close after. And there's been this constant group of core developers who really put in all their work and are finally, in a way, getting rewarded. And at the same time, I think we managed to have a very open community through the openness of our websites and various open mailing lists for everybody to get into and contribute to. And I mean, in the true spirit of open source, we're also very open to patches. And one of the things I like is because the project is reasonably small in terms of manpower, I'm not sure. I think there are about 65 SVN committers currently. So that's really small, especially when you compare it to other things. But that makes it everybody very approachable. And I must say, I also meeting people in real life, but also seeing how ideas and patches are accepted on mailing lists. I guess, you know, that's a way to enter. Certainly.
Cool. I was looking at the website earlier today, and I was really impressed with the level of documentation you folks have done. That's unusual for a free software project. I have to give you, you know, major props for that. Really well done, I think. And that it really helps make the project, you know, give it an approachable face. I also understand that there's a nonprofit organization behind it. currently. Maybe tell us a bit about that, and also give us some pointers as to, you know, where to go to actually get this stuff.
Well, Ryan is on the board, so I guess he's better equipped to handle this question.
Yeah. Basically, in 2003, the founder of the project, who I haven't mentioned yet, Michael Phipps, he started this nonprofit called Haiku Inc. to basically have two purposes: to take donations to help support the project, and also to hold the copyrights for the code. And so generally, when people contribute to Haiku, they generally assign the copyrights to Haiku Inc. And it's all released under the MIT license. And so that's essentially the two main purposes of the board. And it sort of serves as sort of a body, not that controls the project to any extent. Mostly the control is under the core contributors, which is mostly developers, but also people like Niels and other people who work on the documentation you mentioned, who've done a great job, as you said. But basically, yeah, that's what Haiku Inc. is. It's a nonprofit, and people can donate, and we certainly appreciate donations. And as far as getting involved with the project as a developer or as any other person, a documentation or a translator, we're actually working on a lot of translations at the moment, because we recently had a localization kit that's put into use. Just go to the website. First, I would say if you've never tried Haiku, you should maybe download it. Like I said, we just have a fresh new Alpha 2 release, which has a lot of bug fixes over the Alpha 1 release and some new features. Just go to haiku-os.org/git-haiku, and it's on, or just go to haiku-os.org, and on the main page will be a big button to download the Alpha. And you can put that on a USB stick or burn it to a CD-ROM. It's a live CD. You can just pop it in one of your computers and try it out. And hopefully if the drivers are available for your device, you'll be able to play around with it. And if it works in live CD, it's a good chance it'll work if you install it as well. So a lot of people like to try it out on netbooks, things like that. I mean, maybe if you've had a netbook sitting around that you haven't used for a while because it's just too slow or you just don't like it, maybe just try Haiku on that. A lot of people are really impressed at how fast it runs on it. Now, as far as becoming a developer, as Neil said, we love patches. So let's say you try out Haiku, you're playing around with it, you notice a little bug. It could be something small, you know, something's misspelled, a button doesn't work the way you would think, whatever. You can basically take a look at the code. You can actually check out that code inside Haiku over SVN. We also have a Git clone of our SVN repo, if people who prefer Git. And you can download it. The code is very well laid out. There's basically a source directory, and there's apps, servers, and the various parts of the system, and you can pretty quickly find something. And basically just find that component, play around with it, fix it, compile it, test it, and then if you found something that works, basically make a patch and then go to our bug tracker, which is just dev.haiku-os.org, and log the bug that you found in your patch, and we'll take that and add it to the system.
Very cool. Great information. Hey, I also like to get a good view of like how people actually get involved with open source. Niels, Haiku had already been going a little while before you got involved. How did you discover Haiku, and what motivated you to participate in the project? And probably then also what still motivates you, I guess, is probably the extension of that question.
Well, I originally got to know BOS during the R5, personal edition, the free edition that B distributed. It was actually distributed with one of my computer magazines. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in a way, it was so sexy. And that sort of attracted me. I was at the time contributing to KDE with probably the idea that was going to be Linux on the desktop, but I slowly, you know, I sort of got the feeling this might not really be it. A few years later, after B already collapsed, I tried it again, and I thought, let's see what's happening with this. And I realized B is dead, but OpenBOS, then it was called, lives. Mm-hmm. I think the potential I saw and still see in it is the small cohesive way it works. And quite frankly, it's also really nice to work with the other people who are contributing. So in that sense, it's not only the true belief in the software, but also the small, nice team of people you're working with.
Wow. And that just keeps you motivated. Now, are you planning on making some sort of living off of this eventually, or is this always going to be a hobby for you?
No, I of course I plan to marry someone rich, so I don't really plan to
it was that easy.
Now, to me this is a hobby, but I certainly do see business opportunities, and I hope people will seize them. You sort of see that software becomes more, or sale of software is not really something you make a living with, but services are very interesting, and especially with web technologies becoming so prominent, a small coherent tight operating system on netbooks or low performance hardware is somewhere I see a future in.
Now, how much can I ask? How much of your nights and weekends hours you actually? Maybe you don't want to look at this, but how much do you actually spend on working on Haiku?
I think I spend around 8 to 10 hours
a week.
But I'm a week. Yes.
Okay, I was going to say not a day. That would be hard to do that.
No.
And Ryan, same question. How did you get involved with? When did you first discover Haiku? I think you were there from before it was called Haiku, then, right? And what got you involved and keeps you motivated?
Well, much like Niels, I sort of learned about BOS around the R5 days. Actually, a little before that, I actually signed up to be a developer. I was in college, pretty young, but basically, I was at university, so I think B sent some sample CDs and things there. So I played around with it and signed up to be a developer. Got several, they sent the releases for free to developers, so I got version 3 and 4 and 4.5, and then eventually I just got the personal edition for R5, and I actually used it for a summer in school, and that was a lot of fun. And then, once B disappeared, it was sort of disappointing, but then I saw this open source project, and at that point I'd been interested in Linux for a while and other open source operating systems, so it seemed like a good fit. So I just did some small things in the beginning. I wrote some documentation on Jam, which is the build tool that we still use to build IQ. It's also used by FreeType and Boost. And it's from the people who did Perforce source management system. Pretty cool little build, a lot different than Make. Has its flaws, but it's not bad. And I actually wrote like a little documentation about that, and I wrote this thing called the Jam File Engine, which is basically modeled after the Make File Engine, which is something that came with B, like a really simple way to make a text file, Make file, to build a B application. And that was back in 2002 or so, and I kind of like took some time off, did other things, sort of came back to the project, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And I put probably not that many hours. It varies, like basically how much I'm working and other work and what kind of other things I'm doing. But I'll maybe put, also maybe 8 to 10 hours a week. Lately, not as much because I've been busy with some other things. But as far as what keeps me motivated, it's just like I have this real nostalgic feeling about BOS. And, it's not all nostalgia, but I also see a future in it. I really honestly get very frustrated with almost all the operating systems I use nowadays. I mostly use Linux, and it's made a lot of improvements, but there's still issues that cause me to pull my hair out. Windows is a disaster, especially Vista. Maybe 7 is better. And then Mac really isn't bad, but I like basically refuse to drink the Mac Kool-Aid, essentially. I'm using a Mac now. It's my girlfriend's MacBook, and I've done a lot of work on Macs and some of my jobs, but it's one of those things where it's just, something that bothers me a little bit about Apple. Of course, I still bought an iPad, so maybe I'm starting to swallow the Kool-Aid. But what I see with Haiku is just a system where, I'm a developer, but I'm more of a Ruby guy. I'm not an expert in C++ and assembly and the low-level languages that Haiku's built with, but the code is so understandable and so well-composed and separated in its components that I can literally be using Haiku, see a little bug, and probably within an hour have it fixed, and feel like I've made a contribution. And because of the small community we have, even small contributions like that are really appreciated. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, if you're developing for something like Linux, you know, it's still rewarding, all things like that are, but you're still like one guy of bajillions, you know, whereas right now Haiku's a small system and we've made a lot of really good progress. And so it's not like we're stagnating, but we still have a small core group and someone could come along and make a really big difference and really produce something that they can be proud of. And that's kind of what keeps me motivated working on it as well.
Very cool. Niels, just one more question there. So how much software, as in how usable is this thing now or will be in the near future? I mean, do you have basic text editing, basic image editing, video production? And how much of that is stuff that can be ported from other open source projects? Will it port very readily? I know we talked a little bit about portability before, but like, so what, you know, what can I do with this if I download it and plug it in?
Well, you could, if you are a basic text editing, like plain text editing, yeah, sure. There is an Abbey Word port, which I don't know whether it works on Haiku. It was originally written for BOS and it's aging. The problem is with doing a major port like OpenOffice is that it requires Java. The build system is actually very dependent on it. So that's not going to happen soon. At the same time, the fact that we are starting to release stuff now is an interesting period where, for example, Microsoft is putting its Office software online. Google is. And in that sense, I don't know whether you can still say we're behind the facts. Maybe, you know, the facts will catch up with us instead of we have to catch up with the facts. Image editing, there is a obviously nothing big like Photoshop, but there's a neat little tool called Wonderbrush written by one of the core developers. And people actually quite like it because it works. I must say I'm not an image editor, so I haven't used it. I think there is a free tryout as in not as limited in time, but forever working with Alpha 1. I don't know where it's going to be there in Alpha 2, but I just try it out. You know, porting other applications, that really depends on, you have some true multi-platform stuff like VLC, which is already, you know, there are interfaces for that. The game, which I actually enjoy playing, Open Transport Tycoon, also has a port. I don't know whether it's maintained, but it's cool. And so things that are by nature very multi-platform are easy to be ported. I'm really convinced that the time is catching up with us in terms of that the web is the new frontier in a way. So I think WebKit is a big, big step in the right direction. And maybe this is a problem that will solve itself.
Well, it sounds like you've got a really great platform to start with, at least to experiment and look at independently. I mean, it's nice to have something out there that's not Linux, not BSD, some third way of building operating systems that's complete from top to bottom. And for those of us, for those of you guys, sorry, not me, but played with the B machines back in the day, this will certainly bring back some memories. Niels, any last words for our audience?
Yes, do try Alpha 2. It runs perfectly in most emulators. We even have pre-built images for you. There's a cool USB boot or CD boot. So go to the website now, download it, try it out, fall in love with it. And I mean, if you like it, start contributing. And you can start with small things like writing good bug reports and get sucked in, I would say.
Great. And Ryan, any brief words?
Yeah. I'll just say that, you know, what Neil said is true. You know, get involved, try it out. You know, I think right now we're really catered for developers, though I think a lot of people could still get some benefit from using Haiku because we have the web positive browser they can make use of and other applications. And because, which I didn't really mention, we are compatible with a lot of old BOS software, That was a big hurdle we went over. You can use a lot of older BOS software, a lot of which is also open source, and a lot of that's available on various sites like bbits.com and haikuware.com. And so there's things you can do with it. And but we really want developers to try it out and you know, hopefully fall in love with it and see what they can do.
Sounds like a great call to action. So I want to thank you both, Ryan Levenwood coming at us from South Florida, and Neil Sascha Radijk calling to us from the Netherlands, both active participants on the Haiku operating system. Thanks for coming with us today.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Very good. Very good. So, Aaron, interesting, huh?
Absolutely. It's interesting. You can hear that there's a bit of a struggle on the application front, but they've opened up some really great avenues, I think, with their WebKit strategy as well as porting some of the things like Qt over. It's be fascinating to see how they go from here to their actual release, their, you know, R1. I love they've actually stuck as well with the R1, R2. They've really got their feet deep in the roots of the BOS culture there.
Hey, now, I'm not much of a desktop developer. Explain to me what Qt is as opposed to just writing directly to X11. Is it like a layer in front of X11 or what?
Well, it's interesting. When Qt was first started, was it 16, 17 years ago now, the motivation was to be able to write applications on Linux and Windows simultaneously with one code base and actually have it work natively on both, something that some frameworks had promised never really came through. I mean, they mentioned Java, for instance, as, you know, having promised that forever, never really coming through on that, and they're right. So what Qt does is very much like what they've done with Haiku, where they build layers on top of things such as FFmpeg or whatnot. Qt builds layers on top of the native platform. So it's really, I think, promising to hear that they've, you know, got a port of Qt going on Haiku, because they can actually marry that set of libraries to their native platform of BOS and really, I think, open up a huge pipeline to applications to help fill some of those gaps.
Huge number of apps are written to Qt already. I mean, I think, wasn't it Google Earth was the first big thing that was shipped with Qt?
Well, Skype that we're using right now.
Okay.
it's also built on Qt. Qt's in a lot more places than one might expect. There's literally tens of thousands of applications out there. So, yeah, I mean, it's I think, a really good strategy. The combined strategy, I think, of opening the web with WebKit, which is also interesting that it came from the KDE world originally. So there's a lot of Qt kind of foundational there. But that web strategy combined with having a portable library like Qt could really take them far, I think. And, yeah, I'm interested to see where this goes for them.
Yeah, it sounds like a great alternative platform. And if they keep it small and lean and mean and not bloated like Linux and FreeBSD and all the rest of the guys that have kind of gotten to, so it might be interesting for notebooks and small machines to be able to get some really good performance out of too.
Absolutely. And I love the passion that they've just exuded. You know, you can tell they're really into the project. And, you know, I love that let yourself fall in love with it by Niels. That was absolutely brilliant. And really, I think, captures the spirit of the average free software developer who's doing it for, you know, because he believes.
You're going to pry this software from my cold, dead mouse hand. Yes, it's pretty it's pretty obvious there.
Exactly. The company fell over, but that's not the end. We're going to continue it on. We're going to keep it going. Yeah, no, that's classic. And great.
We're so glad there was an unofficial release of R5. We're so happy they unofficially released it, leaked on the net somewhere. That was so cool.
Yeah.
That's really great. So let's look now also into the future, not just for them, but for us. Coming up next week on Floss Weekly, I have Matt Ray on the line of Xenos. Are you familiar with Xenos?
I'm actually not. That's looking forward to actually doing the research and finding out more about it and actually hearing from the man himself.
The man himself, yeah. It's apparently some sort of monitoring platform. I saw him at Texas Linux Fest a few weeks ago. Following week, I'm really looking forward to talking to this guy, Jonathan Simpson, who's going to represent the PDPC, which is the ones that, for those of you that are on IRC any length of time, you know that Freenode's like the major IRC network, and PDPC provides that. They also started conferences, GeekNIC and FOSCON. He's going to talk about those. We've got, just added to the schedule, for those of you that watch my tweets, you saw me add this yesterday, we got Matt Mackall, who is Matt Mackall. And we have He's the project lead on the Mercurial project, the distributed version control system. If you remember our show about Git and about Garrett recently, this is a similar thing. It's being used more for things that are like GNU Emacs. I think GNU Emacs edits with that. Do you use Mercurial?
I have when I've actually contributed to projects that already use it. Honestly, I'm more of a Git and SVN guy, but I'm actually not really big into the whole revision control system thing. I use whatever's there. But when I have used Mercurial, I've have no complaints about it. And yeah, it'll be interesting to hear where he sees it going with Git and whatnot being so popular as well, and what the benefits are. It'll be an interesting interview.
I just use a copy file.c to file.c.good. That seems to
seems sadly, to work this better. Reminds me of a software shop I used to work in.
and file.c. yesterday. File.c. Tuesday.
Exactly. Dot Bob.
Did that way too often. And also just added to the schedule, we have Nicole, I'm going to mispronounce this, sorry, Yankelovich. She's with the Open Wonderland Project. Wonderland is a Java-based 3D worlds environment, immersive worlds environment, and they just forked the project to an open source version. She's going to come on and talk about that. We also have, also just added to the schedule, Michael, I'm going to mispronounce this too, Michael Aidma. Okay, I'm going to have to find out how these guys are all pronounced before I bring them on the show. He's got a PBX in a embedded box, a small Linux box called Asksokia. Oh, I'm mispronouncing that too, but it's based on Asterisk. We have had Asterisk on the show a while back, but we bumped into this guy at the AsterCon, and we've got to have him on the show coming up soon. You can always look at the list of upcoming guests at twit.tv/floss. That's linked from there. If you have a suggestion for the list, please have the project manager email me. That is the fastest way to get them to the top of the list. That's how everybody in the last few weeks has gotten on the show. If you just tell me about a project, I'm not so inclined to go out and hunt up the stuff. So do the research for me. That really, really, really helps me out. We've got about 20 more people already in that category of people who have written me, so I got to get them all on the show. You can follow me at twitter.com/Merlyn, M-E-R-L-Y-N. Find out about upcoming events. Aaron, how can people find out more about you?
Well, you can visit my blog, which is ASIGO, A-S-E-I-G-O, at blogspot.com, or follow me on Identica. Being a free software guy, I'm with the free software version of Twitter, Identica, where I'm known as ASIGO as well.
Mm-hmm. And you survived your first show as co-host, no longer on the guest side of the list. How do you feel?
Yeah, it feels great. It feels like any good first-time experience. It's exhilarating.
Well, maybe there'll be a second time. No, there certainly will be opportunities for a second time. So we'll have it all coming up. You can watch the show live being taped. We're now earlier time slot. We're at Wednesday mornings at 9:30 a.m. Leo time, which is the Pacific time, West Coast time in the U.S. That's 12:30 East Coast time. And math, 7 and 9, 16, 14:30 Zulu in the summer. So we'll see you all coming by if you want to. There's also a chat room. You can give us questions while we're talking to the guests. And I think that about does it. Any last words, Aaron?
Not other than I think I'm going to go download Haiku and try it out.
Very good. It's. I'm going to at least play with it inside a VMware space. I think they even have a VMware install already, so we just have to download it and run it through the player. That'll be really cool. So we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.